Hey there, everybody. It is August the 3rd, 2011, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken, and as always, you can drop us a line at thisshowisogay@aol.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn about upcoming guests, listen to past shows, and just learn more about all the gayness that is This Show Is So Gay. And, of course, stroll on over to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. Quite a fun show in store for you this week, and we're going to queue up our first guest. Hey, first guest, are you ready?
I'm absolutely ready.
All right, let me introduce you. Tom Meiser is an award-winning lyricist, librettist, and recipient of a 2009 Jonathan Larson Grant for his musical theater writing. His work has been seen on theatrical stages around the country, as well as in workshop presentations at the Williamstown Theater Festival, which we actually talked about last week with Judy Gold, the Eugene O'Neill Center, and the National Alliance for Musical Theater's Festival of New Musicals. He's written travel features for national publications, including Passport Magazine and Frommer's Budget Travel, and he is the on-camera host for the web series Passport TV. He is also the editor, which we're going to talk a ton about, of the Broadway Blog, which is an insider's guide to theater and live performance in New York City, Broadway, off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway. Is there off-off-off-Broadway, or do we just stop at off-off-Broadway?
I think that's Hoboken.
Okay. Or it's Vermont, and beyond, from the West End in London to regional theaters across the U.S. And that website launched in March. Tom Meiser, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
I'm so glad to be here.
How the heck are you?
I'm doing fine.
All right. First, we need to talk about, and I don't mean to peek too early in this interview, but we need to talk about the crowning moment of your already extraordinary career. And you have a lot more career to go, do you not?
I hope so.
Okay. The pinnacle of acting superstardom when you, Tom, I don't know why you're giggling already. When you,
I know where you're headed.
You have no idea where I'm going, except you do. When you, Tom Meiser, sold out Radio City Music Hall for 2 weeks.
That I did, although I think it had more to do with the big blue dog than me.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
You're cruel. Yeah, my acting career consisted of a lot of shows that ended in the word live, exclamation point. And the big one was Blue's Clues Live. That's, yeah, I was Steve in the green striped shirt for 2 years.
Oh, please tell me you still have that green striped shirt.
You know what? Those striped shirts were held under lock and key. I wasn't allowed to keep one for myself.
Wow.
It was very, very important that I be seen in public in it. Yeah.
You sold out Radio City Music Hall for 2 weeks.
It was pretty amazing, I have to say, as a little character actor type, to think that I was standing center stage at Radio City with, you know, just me singing was astonishing. Of course, it was four-year-olds. But
but they were screaming, and they didn't come alone, because even in New York, the four-year-olds, they don't go on the subway alone.
It's best not to, although there are some tough ones from Brooklyn.
Now, Blue, people get confused. Blue, male or female dog?
Blue is a boy dog.
There you go.
Yeah. Magenta is a girl dog. It took me a second there, because actually the trick is that it's usually played by women. The voice of Blue on the TV show and our Blues in the show were all women. So, very confusing.
Yes.
Peter Pan.
Steve is related to Joel?
Joe? You know, that was just after my time. It was the old Steve from TV left at that point, and Joe came in when Steve went off to college.
Gotcha.
It was like Days of Our Lives, really.
Yes, except Blue's Clues Live. What was the big mystery that Blue had to solve, or you had to help Blue solve?
In our live show, it was, what is the most spectacular place of all? And do you think you have any guesses?
Brattleboro. Is it Brattleboro? That would be, let's just pause for a second. If indeed in the sold out performances of Blue's Clues Live at Radio City Music Hall, that they discovered the most fabulous place was Brattleboro, Vermont, that would be huge.
I think they should think about making that the travel slogan for your town there. But you're actually kind of close.
What was the correct answer?
Home.
Oh, I love home.
No place like it.
So there were clues that helped people find home?
Yes, okay. Although you know what? This was a long time ago, and my memory fades as what the clues were, because, you know, they were so complicated.
But you wrote them down in your handy-dandy
notebook, which, yes, I stole. I don't know if I should say this, but
whoa,
I stole my notebook. I didn't get one of the shirts, but I stole the notebook, and it's sitting on my bookshelf.
I would totally rat you out if it got me tickets to a show. All right, well, we'll talk more about that. Now, just to to close that loop of this interview. Sometimes when I'm walking around and I see something, I yell out a clue. Is that normal?
I still do it to this day.
Just checking.
Yeah, it's best.
By the way, I love Blue's Clues.
It was actually, you know, one of the best times of my life. I mean, there's nothing like feeling like you're Elvis, walking out and having 2,000 people scream.
I would be telling everyone, yeah, I hung out with Paprika.
And you would be surprised how many women are hot for Steve.
Yeah. Gay radio show. Keep that in mind, Tom Iser.
I didn't say I followed up on it.
There weren't any, you didn't get any gay dads coming after you?
You know, there was one time where the whole cast went over to a gay bar in Providence.
Okay.
And it was literally across the street from the theater, and I was sitting there ordering a drink, and the bartender came up to me and said, "Would you sign this napkin? We saw you in the show."
Oh, my God.
And I thought, oh, Nickelodeon's going to love that. They sell that to the...
You're like, that girl over there, she's Paprika. You should get her signature, too. That's awesome. All right, well, that's Blue's Clues. It's very exciting, though. Did your family come and see you?
They did, although I always encourage them to bring a kid, because otherwise you look like you're a little bit of a, you know, yeah.
Killing the family show here, Tom Iser,
exactly.
Just putting that out there. Now, as I said, you also on-camera host for Passport TV, and I've seen you do some pretty cool things, Tom Iser. You've been to a wedding on an airplane.
Yes.
You've been in, like, an igloo something.
I went to the Ice Hotel in northern Sweden.
Okay. I've seen you naked on a massage table on a cruise.
You probably have seen that, although luckily it's framed nicely to keep it PG.
Oh, see, I don't have that version.
You got the uncut.
I got the director's cut, I guess, of that one. How did that gig come about?
You know, actually, it was one of those things where I love traveling, and I'm a writer, and I thought, you know, what better way to combine the two than to work for a travel magazine? So I just started asking around, looking for ways to get freelance work. And Passport is based out of New York. I met the editor, and they just started sending me on some stories. And then ultimately, when they decided to do video reports, because of my background doing Blue's Clues and other on-camera things, they decided, you know, I had the qualifications to do that. Basically, I could walk and talk at the same time.
Nice. It's a talent.
You know, it's gotten me far.
There you go. Now, what about that wedding? That wedding was pretty cool.
It was awesome. SAS Airlines hosted the first gay wedding in on a plane, and we flew from Stockholm to New York, and the wedding actually had to happen in the first 15, 20 minutes of the flight because it had to be over Swedish airspace where it was legal.
Wow.
But it was actually an amazing experience because although, you know, it's definitely a part of a publicity thing that they were trying to reach out to the gay and lesbian audience, they had two couples, and the second couple, the first couple was a male couple from Germany, and the second couple was a female couple from Poland. And if you know anything about Polish gay rights movement, it needs all the help it can get. It's a very conservative country, and this couple really made a difference. It was front page news in Poland,
Wow. And
you felt that. You felt that emotion as you were sitting there.
That's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, it was kind of amazing.
And then you surfed?
Very badly. Very, very badly, but I had two very hot surf butlers who helped me, which
did.
Made it all much better.
Got the director's cut on that one, too. And by the way, I'll be selling that on thisshowisogay.com to raise money for our dog and pony little show here.
Exactly. Me in a wetsuit, always good for some cash.
Not even touching that one. Any other things that you've done that I haven't mentioned that stick out? The Ice Hotel, I wasn't so into. It just
really?
It looked uncomfortable.
It was actually kind of incredible, and I got to herd reindeer and prove that I could be butch. I actually caught a reindeer with a lasso.
Is that a metaphor?
Whatever you want it to be.
Okay. So that was cool. I've never done that. What else have you done that you've loved?
Oh, my gosh. You know, some of the best things, like Barcelona is an amazing city.
It's my favorite.
Really?
Oh, Barcelona is actually one of my favorite cities in the world.
Yeah, beautiful people, beautiful food, just all around. Like, you can do everything there, and if it's the right time of year, you can go to the beach.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I rode a train across South Africa, a safari train across South Africa, which was sort of as a child who read Agatha Christie's, I kept waiting for a murder to happen, but thank God it didn't. But they even introduced you as you got on the train. It was sort of 1930s style, and they called out your name, and you stepped onto the train.
Wow.
And I was like, next suspect.
And they had a notebook, and you yelled out a clue. Oh, that would be just...
It all came full circle.
Home, home, home. That's fantastic. I love that. All right, so you've gotten to travel.
Yeah, that was the best part about the whole experience, is that you can't make a huge living doing travel writing, but the travel itself is more than enough compensation.
I went to Queens once.
It's very exotic.
I don't really have a comparable story. All right, hey, we got to talk some Broadway. And I told you this, I was telling Tom this off the air, that I'm really excited to talk about Broadway because I've actually been looking for the opportunity to talk about it over the past couple of years, and we've had a couple guests who were slated to be on the show from kind of big-time Broadway actors, and something always came up, and they weren't able to call in. But we won't call them out on that, although I'll put their names on the website. And we talked a little bit about Broadway with Judy Gold on last week's show. But that was more about her show. So I want to talk more about Broadway in general, but starting out, tell everybody about the Broadway blog and how that came about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually an offshoot of Passport Magazine and their website, passport.com. And they came to me and they really felt like the gay and lesbian audience is always coming to New York. They love theater. And they'd always been getting a lot of questions at the magazine. And they thought, why don't we have an offshoot where I could write about Broadway and theater actually all over the world from my inside perspective as someone who worked in theater and continues to work in theater. So we set that up, and it's thebroadwayblog.com. And I like to think of it as a cocktail conversation.
Okay.
I think there's plenty of people out there who are doing negative, sort of snarky theater writing. And mine is about celebrating, laughing, being like you're at a table after a show with some of the best actors in Broadway, and chatting about what's good and what they love.
Nice. Now, who have you gotten to talk to?
Oh my gosh, some of my favorite people. I recently talked to, I don't know if you know Nancy Opel,
of course,
of the funniest actresses, best voice, and she told me some amazing stories about the first time she was in the original company of Evita. She was Patti LuPone's cover and played Evita at the age of like 22, and she was in the original Sunday in the Park with George, and she told me some amazing stories about the first time they heard Finishing the Hat when Mandy Patinkin got up to sing it, and just brings tears to your eyes, actually. It's so moving.
Now, so you're talking to people that you probably... It's kind of like what this is with me in the show. It's just, well, oh my gosh, am I really talking to this person? I've seen them in shows. I've seen them do this and that. Are you having that experience?
A little bit, although a lot of times what I try to do is find people that either I've worked with or people that I know through people so that it's a more casual, friendly conversation.
Gotcha.
It's not about sort of like tooting horn and sort of here comes the big star, although we get some big stars to talk to us. It's more about like hanging out with friends. Like I said, having the Cosmopolitan after that, after the show comes down and feeling like you're part of that kind of conversation.
Well, I want to back up a step because my fear right now, and this is nothing personal, Tom Miser.
All right.
I'll backtrack off of it. My fear right now is that someone is listening and they just skipped ahead to the next segment of the show because they're thinking, oh, well, Broadway. Broadway exists in this one place and it's inaccessible. And we can talk about that as well because financially, it's not so accessible right now. I mean, tickets can be very expensive.
Absolutely. And if you're talking about a top-tier show, the premium seats can go for huge prices, like the Book of Mormon right now. I mean, $300-some dollars if you want to see it this week.
So for the person, right, because they're right about to click ahead on their iPod, how do we sell Broadway to people? What are they missing? Because they're living, you know, we have listeners from all over the world, and odds are they're in a place that doesn't have the Great White Way. How do we sell it to them in such a way to say, hey, no, this is an important part of our culture?
Well, I think there are a couple things. First of all, it's actually there's a major resurgence now, and you can't help but feel the young talent, you know, whether it's the Glee effect or whatever you want to call it. It's actually very young and vibrant right now. Mm-hmm. A lot of shows being written by people in their 20s. There's a lot of theater and a lot of music theater everywhere, and it's influencing the culture across the board. Also, I think you can't get anything more American. If you really want to sort of see an American art form, it's music theater. And the best practitioners of it are on Broadway. So it's definitely worth that. And there are ways to get cheaper tickets. It doesn't have to be an elitist form. It's something that is vibrant and happening. And there are ways to go see those shows. And actually in regional theaters all over the country, when I say Broadway, in a lot of ways, that's limiting because so much of the great theater that's going on, so much that ends up on Broadway is actually starting all over the country.
Right.
So if you sort of tune into that, there's something happening in your city or someplace near you that actually is on its way to Broadway. Broadway is more the end result now.
Yeah. Well, one of the critiques, and this is more of an inside critique, of course, of Broadway, is that you have to have the certain aesthetic. to make it. You have to have a certain physical aesthetic. And I have always said on the show that it's amazing to me, living in New York for so long, that you could stumble into a piano bar on a Friday night and have your bartender get up to the mic and have a more amazing voice than anyone on Broadway. But because they don't have the look, they don't make it.
You're preaching to the choir here. This is one of my pet peeves right now. I think that the, I hate to put it this way exactly, but the Chelseaization of Broadway, you sort of see these choruses of guys who all look exactly the same, and they're beautiful, but it's a show about a high school. Nice. Like, this is not what people look like. Or actually, the best example was some of the recent shows like Priscilla that have, it's supposed to be drag queens. Mm-hmm. Well, I've never seen a drag queen, a good drag queen, that looked like they've been working out and building muscle like that. But they all are these huge guys, and it affects the sort of the style and the tone of a show when it's sort of cookie cutter. So it's something that I definitely think can affect how you see the shows and create sort of a false world. But, you know, I understand why they're doing it. People are coming to see a fantasy in some respects.
Right. But then Broadway Bears becomes like this big event, and yep. It was a little bit more interesting to me when there were different body types. And you tell everyone what Broadway Bears is if they don't know.
Absolutely. Broadway Bears is a fundraiser once a year where the whole Broadway community gets together and basically does a burlesque show. And they raise money for Equity, Fights AIDS, Broadway Cares. And it's an amazing event. They've raised a ton of money. And it started out just as a little sort of strip show at Splash in New York. And now it's a huge industry, and they put on an amazing show. But it's exactly that. It's these sort of cookie-cutter body types, and you lose some of the quirkiness because everyone's trying to look like that show.
Right.
And when you go see a Broadway show, you expect people to look like that. Although there are some changes. You know, there are some shows that still get away with it. Book of Mormon, again, not to bring that up again, but the Mormon boys don't look like that. And they've kept that pretty true. It's a part of the landscape right now, and it's a part of how they sell tickets. So, you know, there's good and bad.
Now, we have a mutual friend who actually, I don't know if you know this, who's our mutual friend.
Thomas?
Yes, of course.
I was going to say, I thought it might be a Broadway person.
No. I'm sure maybe we have some of those too. So our mutual friend, Thomas Gensmer, who actually was maybe the third guest ever on this show, Is So Gay, back in 2008. No joke, he was on show 3 or 4. People can go to thisshowissogay.com and scroll all the way back to the first page and hear his show. He ran social media campaigns that really helped President Obama get elected, but that's not actually why I'm talking about him right now. I am talking about him because Thomas and I were roommates together sophomore year, and Thomas became, I would say, obsessed with Rent.
Yeah, that's to put it mildly.
Yes. It was crazy, but it was really great for me because I really had a single because he was always out online for me. So that, I don't know. I guess I'm trying to think of, for folks that don't know, you know, that time in the mid-late 90s to get online and get free tickets for Rent was just like, oh, this is just such an experience, and it's Broadway accessible on a whole different level. Is anything like that happening right now?
Actually, absolutely. Like I said, there's sort of a young generation that has picked up new shows. I mean, you had your Spring Awakening, which was a huge hit in the same way recently.
Yeah.
And there are kids lining up outside these shows, like Wicked, like How to Succeed because of Daniel Radcliffe.
Right.
And you've got 17, 18-year-olds lining up, sitting and waiting for tickets and for those $20 front row seats that they usually give away for certain shows. And it is there. There's still that energy. It's just the shows change and the generation changes about what that show is for them. You can definitely date people by what that show is. You know, I'm definitely from the Rent era, but now it'd be someone who says Spring Awakening.
Right.
And it's still there. There's still that energy. And it's actually, I think, even more so because of things like Glee, where those kids are actually hearing show tunes and thinking they're cool.
Right. Now, for someone who grew up in the Rent era to be the recipient of a Jonathan Larson grant, what was that experience like for you?
It was incredible. I mean, he's someone who I had looked up to, especially because he was someone who just plugged away and kept working, and he was someone who unfortunately didn't get the recognition that he deserved before he died,
right.
But he was just on the cusp of it. And I think the hardest thing about being a music theater writer today is that it's so hard to just get noticed. because it's a very limited number of shows that ever get done. Mm-hmm. And so you're just hoping somebody notices you. And that's what he was hoping. And so for his family to create this award where they give it to composers that haven't had that sort of national exposure, it's amazing. And to have some of his family there giving it to you, you can see the thread running through from him to you, and you just feel special because of it.
And if folks haven't listened to Tick, Tick, Boom, I actually like it more than Rent.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I mean, I think Rent is an incredible show. It's fascinating, but you wish you could have seen him work even further with it.
Yeah.
And there's so much talent there.
Now, I know you have in front of you perhaps a schedule of what's coming up this year. Is that true? Am I making that up?
I've got some shows sitting in front of me just in case people are curious about what's coming up that looks good.
What's coming up that looks good?
You know, for me, the thing I'm most excited about actually is a straight play, a non-musical. And I don't know if anyone saw or heard about the revival of Born Yesterday, starring Nina Arianda.
No.
She was nominated for a Tony, first time out of the gate on Broadway, and she was incredible. And she's coming, they're taking the show that she was originally in off-Broadway that sort of got her discovered, called Venus and Fur, and it is moving to Broadway. And I can tell you now, that is going to be a Tony-winning performance.
All right.
So get ready for that one.
I'm putting a check mark there for my Tony pool. Next.
And then, you know, actually musically, unfortunately, there's not a lot of new musicals coming to the stage in the fall. We've got revivals like the big Follies that's coming up from the Kennedy Center, which looks kind of awesome. Especially if you're a Sondheim person, Bernadette Peters.
Can we pause right there?
Yeah.
I am very much, and I don't know that you and I have ever discussed this before, I am not a Sondheim person.
Uh-oh. Them's fighting words.
Now, that I have been told over and over and over. People will throw down if you say you're not a Sondheim person. They will look at you funny. They'll be like, oh, well, you're just not a real person. I am not a Sondheim person, and I'm just putting it out there.
That's okay. What is it about him? I'm curious.
You know, for me, it's going to see Into the Woods and thoroughly enjoying the first act.
Uh-huh.
And wanting to throw my shoe at Vanessa Williams in the second act. Because I just don't like that deconstruction in that way. And so I am judging Sondheim based on the second act of Into the Woods.
Which a lot, you are not alone. People find that it changes gears. Now, personally, I think that it's what makes the show great. But a lot of that actually may come down to productions, you see. Because some of these pieces require a really steady hand to do well. And I think if you went back and watched the original production on DVD, you might like it more.
Okay. But, I might do that.
You know, some of his other shows, though, are so accessible, and people think, oh, they're heady and whatever. But, you know, Sweeney Todd is just a rip-roaring thriller that's funny and grotesque and makes you laugh and scream. And it's so smart, but it works like gangbusters. And, you know, you just have to dig a little deeper. And I defy you to really hate Sondheim. If you say that, then you're actually hating West Side Story. You don't like some of his early shows, which are some of the classics of all time.
Okay. First of all, Tom, you as the guest, you're not supposed to be causing guilt in the host. That's not really how this works.
It's the Catholic upbringing.
Yeah.
I can't help it.
Well, as the Jewish host, stop. I will say, and this is a fun tip for people who are visiting a Broadway show, going to a Broadway show for the first time, it turns out you are not supposed to. You are not supposed to. It doesn't say this in the playbill. You are not supposed to throw your shoe at Vanessa Williams in the second act of any musical.
It's best not to.
Yeah.
The actors find it slightly distracting.
Yes. As it turns out, they don't they don't like that. We do have to talk about your musical selections for this week's show.
Of course. Glad to.
This is the part of the show, Tom Meiser. I perhaps didn't tell you all that you were doing, and that's why it makes this segment fun. This is the part of the show, Tom, where we talk about your musical selections, but you are going to put a little twist on it and tell our listening audience what some of these songs say about Tom Meiser.
Oh, great.
Ooh, I know it's
you
very...
You did not warn me about this.
Well, that's why I do this show, Tom. Now... You ready? Because right, I'll choose some. I'll choose some easy ones for you. And by that I mean I won't. So let's start out with what do we want to do? Let's start out with new music from Ragtime, which they keep trying on Broadway. What does new music from Ragtime say about Tom Meiser?
Well, first of all, it says that I love how when theater works at its finest, when music and acting. Get together, and that show is so underappreciated, especially that moment because it's so romantic. It is a beautiful moment on stage when that music swells, and it doesn't get much better than that. That's what music theater does better than anybody else, and I guess it proves that I'm just a sap.
Well, we knew. We knew. We've been listening to you for 20 minutes. But let me challenge you a little bit on that. Huh? That new music and ragtime are when musical theater really works. Ragtime, not a very sustainable show.
You know, but I think that, again, has to do with productions. Actually, the recent production was amazing, the revival. It's just timing. And, you know, it got bulldozed when it came in the first time. I think it was the same year as Lion King, I want to say.
It was 2001. 2001.
You know, when you're up against that, it's impossible to get noticed. And it had a lot of sort of production issues because of the producers of the show at the time. So, you know, it's unfair, but the show itself works, and it works really well. You can quibble about certain things in the second act, but it's a great piece. And some of the music is so simple and so beautiful and takes a complex story and makes it accessible.
But I think that the way – I'm going to keep going with this. Mm-hmm. I think that the way that a lot of American society, or however you want to be more specific on that, judges the success of a Broadway show is how many seasons does it run?
See, right there, that's the problem, because a show like that can have a life beyond Broadway, mm-hmm. and it can be very successful. Or look at the best example is a show like Chicago. That opened on Broadway the same year as Chorus Line, and just it did well, but it sort of faded and didn't win the Tonys that Chorus Line won and all this kind of stuff. And you would have said, that was a noble failure. Well, look who's winning now. I mean, that show, The Revival, has run, right. I think it's the longest-running revival, if I'm not mistaken, and the movie wins the Oscar, and it's just about timing.
What I hear you saying, then, that is leader of the pack, it might still make a comeback.
Oh, you can hope.
By the way,
there's still room.
I'm hoping, just so you know. Just want to put that out there to everyone, leader of
the pack.
You've
got the beehive ready?
I'm wearing it right now. It's one of the defining moments of my childhood. My parents, I was extraordinarily fortunate that for every birthday, for any special event, my parents would take us to a Broadway show because we lived right there, and we saw some weird Broadway show. I mean, we had the Leader of the Pack and the Tap Dance Kid. I know. It was good stuff.
Fabian Glover.
It was amazing. And I will say, there was one show, they're like, oh, well, let's go to this show. And I said, no, I'm not feeling well. I'm going to stay home. And they went without me because it sounded stupid. So with that, I never got to see the original Chorus Line.
Oh, man.
I know. They could take away my gay card. All right, we got one more song for you, because we just got to go this route, because it is both a Broadway show and perhaps an animated musical. What does The Little Mermaid's Part of Your World say about Tom Miser?
Oh, my gosh.
By the way, that whole song, now that I'm thinking about it, could be a clue. Every time she picks up something, she's like, what is this? It's a clue.
You are amazing. You bring everything full circle. I'm impressed. What it says about me, I think, A, is just, you know, I almost get emotional. Howard Ashman.
Yes.
Greatest lyricist. Greatest loss that he died early. His lyrics in some of these songs are just so beautiful and so funny. And he has my favorite rhyme in all of music theater, which is from another song in Little Mermaid. It's les poissons, hee hee hee, ha ha ha. You don't find that in a rhyming dictionary, let me tell you. There is an exuberance and a joy, and his stuff, like Part of Your World, you know, you can make fun of it all you want. It taps into something that is so sweet and funny and character-driven, and I think we all love that, and I'm a sap.
Best Disney movie made into a musical.
Ooh, that they actually turned into a musical. You know, the original Lion King, if you saw it in the first year or two, the staging, brilliant.
Yeah, the correct answer is Tarzan.
Really?
I loved it.
Interesting choice. An interesting choice.
That's why we make the guest analyze themselves. We don't analyze the host. I get just to put information out
there. What does that say about you? No, let's turn it around. What does that say about you?
Oh, you're so cute when you think that you can do that on this show, Tom Miser. You're just wrong, though. No, I enjoyed Tarzan immensely. But I will say, even though it's not, I love Seussical, too, even though it's not a Disney movie.
Seussical's a great show. And actually, if you've seen it, again, a great example of a show that flopped, quote-unquote, on Broadway, but has a huge life because it got scaled down to the size that it should have been. And it's a sweet, funny show by the same people who wrote Ragtime.
Love it. I didn't even know this. Look at that. I didn't even know that.
Yep.
Now, let's just sum it up for people. They're in some random, not even some random part in the country. They could be in New Jersey, and they've never seen a Broadway show. What are they missing?
They are missing out on pure joy, because there's nothing like the combination of great dancers, music, and good storytelling, as far as a music theater goes. And you're going to get the best of that on Broadway.
Okay. All right. Makes me want to go to Broadway. I actually haven't seen a show in a really long time because it's so cost prohibitive.
I tell you, BroadwayBox.com.
All right.
Discount tickets.
Now, what if people want to read some sort of blog about Broadway? Where should they go?
Gosh, I think the best thing to do is to go to TheBroadwayBlog.com and join in the conversation. I'm not an expert. I want to be a part of a conversation with people.
Nice. Is there a Facebook presence for the Broadway blog?
There is as well, and I'm also on Twitter, Broadway Blog Tom.
Wow. Look at all these different things. It's all a clue. It's all a clue.
And I do wear my green striped shirt at home.
Yes. Well, you stole the notebook. Don't think that we're not going to let you get off the hook for that one.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Miser. Yeah, I mean, this is cool. I really, it's the same way when we talk about drag on the show and we talk about all the different places in this world where they don't have different pieces of this culture. And of course, you can download the music on iTunes, but actually being there and seeing a show, it was such a defining moment of my childhood and I'm sure contributed to who I am. And I just want everyone to have that experience.
Absolutely. When you see Sutton Foster at the end of Anything Goes Revival right now, dance, sing, and actor her you-know-what off.
Yeah,
it's like nothing else you're going to see.
Nice. Can I just ask, so the seminal moment for you seeing in a Broadway show, what was it?
It was going to see Falsettos, actually, right out of college, or just before I left college, and I got to see the Broadway production, and I thought, A, as a young gay man, here I am on stage, and B, it touched something. It was so beautiful and moving to me. And I remember standing up for a standing ovation, and no one else did. But the entire cast looked at me and sort of caught my eye, and I just felt like, this is it. This is what I want to be doing.
That story. That is a good story, Tom Miser.
Well, you know, I try.
Everybody, you must go head over to thebroadwayblog.com.
Absolutely.
All right, and check out all the cool things that are happening there. Tom Miser, an absolute treat having you on the show.
Great to be here.
We're going to do this as an annual segment where you tell us about shows that are coming up.
Oh, I'm glad to. Anytime.
All right. Tom, a pleasure as always.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Where have I been? How did we change? Caught in this strange new music scene. Was I away too long? Just like that tune, simple and clear, I've come to hear new music. Why can't you hear the song? His finger struck those keys, and every note says please, and every chord says turn my way. I thought I knew what love was, what these lovers play. New music haunting me, and somehow taunting me. My love was never half as true. And I ask myself, why can't I sing it too?
you got to see. Sarah, we got a son.
All right, and we are back. Is this weird?
It's a little weird.
Jody's here, everybody.
Hi.
It's been a long time.
I know.
We even promised a guest. I don't know who we is. I promised Robin Oakes that you would be back, and I've been saying on the air, I swear I have co-hosts, but now we're in a whole different station.
I know.
Now, you're moving.
I am moving.
And I'm going to be moving.
You are moving.
And so I'm going to be closer to where the new station is going to be, and you're going to be farther away. Will you still come downtown and do the show once a month? Yes, because you're still going to do chorus.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so we're
absolutely
good. Yeah. All right, we're good. And I will say that without a co-host, I don't do that much news. I just keep having guest after guest. So you and I can do some news.
We can.
Now, this is kind of a funny story to do with you because it has no effect on your life whatsoever because it's about TV. the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, and we have had the executive director on this show, Jarrett Berrios. GLAAD just released their Network Responsibility Index, which grades all the TV networks based on the percentage of primetime programming that features LGBT characters and assigns the networks of a grade of either excellent, good, adequate, or failing. Mm. I would ask you, hey, how do you think certain networks did? But you got nothing, right?
I can tell you how I think Fox did.
How do you think Fox did?
I think it's sort of a middling to poor, generally. Yeah.
They weren't on the lowest side, but they were kind of middling. On the on the lowest side for network television was CBS.
Interesting.
CBS received, well, you know, they always say that CBS is old white men watching, and me, because I watch The Good Wife. It's one of the most enjoyable shows on television. You've not seen it, have you?
No.
So good. Never I can't even tell you. And they have, and I bring this up, I will make it even relevant. The Good Wife has a lesbian character on the show who I enjoy immensely, but she also sleeps with men, and that kind of annoys me. But so The Good Wife is a great show. So CBS received a grade of adequate. They have 1,110 total hours of primetime programming, but GLAAD has said that only 114 hours of those, 10%, are LGBT inclusive. And then moving down the list, these are the bottom three: A&E. Huh. I don't watch a lot of A&E. I don't even.
That's interesting.
I'm not even really exactly sure what's on A&E.
They used to call that the World War II channel. Some comedian called it that.
Well, they have 290 total hours of primetime programming, and only 14.5 of them are LGBT inclusive. 5%, they received a grade of failing. Ooh. But at the bottom of the list was TBS.
Huh.
TBS. They only have 86. Now, this is a little skewed because they only have 86 total hours of primetime programming. Only 4 of them are LGBT inclusive. They also received a grade of failing. On the high end, excellent.
Yeah.
ABC Family.
How interesting.
How cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It is cool.
So I'm into that. There was a college story. I can do college stories. Not that I couldn't do college stories with you before, but now you work for college.
I do.
So this is from the Princeton Review. And the Princeton Review just released today their annual tally of LGBT-friendly and unfriendly colleges. And I'm always kind of weirded by these. Like, you know, Jody and I, and I can say Jody and I work at Marlboro College.
It's true.
And you actually forwarded me a link earlier about how colleges are graded and how they're evaluated. And I will tell you that Marlboro College does not grade well according to a lot of LGBT indexes, because one of the prime questions on these
indices.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. See, by myself, I would have just said indexes. Indexes. I don't know what I would have said. Whatever I said, it was wrong. Yeah. One of the prime questions that they grade you on is, do you train your security force in LGBT issues?
Oh, well.
And then I have to say no,
right?
Because we don't have a security force, and then we get a really low grade for LGBT safety on campus. I know. It stinks.
Yeah, that does stink.
But it's a very specific question, and I've read it a million times, and you can't really say yes.
No. Yeah, we can't. Yeah. Unless we count other positions as being the quote-unquote security.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's that. But some schools have been said to be unfriendly, and they found a big old correlation with conservative Christian schools. And I don't know, the whole article is all about how this is unsurprising, and that kind of annoys me because it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't.
It just doesn't.
No.
So that Wheaton College, Wheaton College over in Wheaton, Illinois, was once again ranked as the least friendly school for LGBT students. Mm. The small school of less than 3,000 students in the sleepy Chicago suburb. It's a Chicago suburb. They have a community covenant that strictly forbids homosexual behavior. I have that. Mm-hmm. I don't have that.
The covenant or the behavior?
For the rest of this show, I have the covenant.
Uh-oh.
And the statement from Wheaton College reads, quote, "Our goal is to follow God's truth," which, if I stopped there, you could still say does include homosexual behavior.
Yeah.
But there's more to the quote, mm-hmm. including what the Bible says about sexual ethics. They're all about the ethics there at Wheaton College.
Yeah.
While some may interpret this stance as hostility towards the LGBT community, our aim is to stand respectfully and graciously for biblical truth. One Wheaton, a support organization of pro-gay alumni, was disappointed with Wheaton College's results. They said, quote, "We're sad." This is from Kristen Wynn, the group's spokeswoman. She said, quote, "We're sad that this ranking exists in the first place. College is a difficult and transformative time for people. We're sad there are still spaces in the U.S. where students feel they are not supported and are alone."
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be like that.
It really doesn't.
It doesn't have to be.
I also
like
think that school should have some very strict regulations on shellfish and the wearing of mixed fabrics if they're really standing for biblical truth.
I have that covenant too.
Yeah.
I do not eat the shellfish.
Okay.
And I'm wearing almost all polyester today.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I'm wearing synthetics. So I'm not mixing my. I could totally be the dean of students at Wheaton College today.
You could today.
For the next
hour.
Hour, I could be the dean of students at Wheaton's College. Hey, where did I go last week?
Yeah.
I went to Dollywood.
You did go to Dollywood.
Now, I covered this very, very briefly at the end of last week's show with Judy Gold, that there was this lesbian couple who was, I don't know if they were really ejected from Dollywood or they were just asked. She was asked, one of them was wearing a Marriage is So Gay t-shirt, and they were asked to change. She was asked to change the shirt, and she was ejected. This is the same weekend that I was there.
Oh, my
Dollywood
God.
Had a total This Show Is So Gay story when
wow.
I was there.
Wow.
One might
breaking news.
Well, I think I triggered it.
You must have.
I should have worn a This Show Is So Gay t-shirt, which, by the way, you can purchase.
Really?
You can go to the This Show Is So Gay Facebook group, and the proceeds from the This Show Is So Gay t-shirt and magnet purchases benefit me. So I would love to say that they benefit some organization. They benefit this show.
Right. Right. Which is bigger than just you.
That's kind of stuff I'm not supposed to say, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, I would use the editing button, but I'm a little punchy this week, and you haven't been here in a while, so I feel bad editing really anything. Well, Dolly Parton has come out, not of the closet, but in defense of this couple. Country music superstar Dolly Parton says she is, quote, "truly sorry that a lesbian couple felt discriminated against at her theme park where Ken Schneck was last week." That's not in the quote, but I just feel it's part of it. when Olivier Odom and her wife Jennifer Tipton tried to enter Dollywood, Odom was asked to turn her shirt inside out because it said "Marriage is So Gay." Mm-hmm. When she asked why, the park employee said that Dollywood is a family park. Got it. You know, I was just sitting here thinking, well, is it a family park? I was just there. But what the heck is a family park?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. So she wrote, Odom wrote a letter to Dollywood, and Dolly Parton has said she issued a statement apologizing. She said, quote, "I am truly sorry for the hurt or embarrassment regarding the gay and lesbian t-shirt incident at Dollywood's Splash." Oh, I wasn't at Splash Country. See, that was the difference. That's a whole different thing. That's next door park. Everyone knows of my personal support of the gay and lesbian community, which we do.
Mm,
she's
absolutely
very supportive. Mm-hmm. Dollywood is a family park and all families are welcome. There you go, Dolly. You go, Dolly.
She's awesome.
Parton ended her statement by saying, quote, "I am looking further into the incident and hope and believe it was more policy than insensitivity. I'm very sorry it happened at all." So we like that.
Yes.
Good old Dolly Parton.
She's great.
So gosh, I mean, you haven't been on the show in so long. The last time you were on the show, gay marriage wasn't even legal in New York.
I know.
And now it is.
And now it is.
Are you and Jen going to go get married in New York?
Probably not.
Why?
Because we don't live there.
But it's legal there.
I know, but it's legal in Vermont.
Okay.
And we live here.
All right. That's fine. Now, we talked about this with Judy Gold last week. I would love to get your take on this.
Sure.
A lot of the stories that came out, Larry Kramer had this whole statement about how people need to chill out about New York. Like, this is not, yes, great, but this is not the be-all, end-all. This is like a nugget of nothingness in a sea of, what is it, 4 or 5 states that allow this, in a sea of lack of acceptance and stop celebrating.
I don't agree with that. New York is a big deal.
Okay.
Because it has one of the most internationally known, recognizable cities ever in the history of the world right now. And that's a big deal.
Spring Valley.
Actually, I was thinking of Albany.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Chestnut Ridge, where I used to work at Bagel Ridge.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Mm-hmm. You should know, by the way, as a new employee at Marlboro College, yes, I could quit here at any second and go back working at Bagel Ridge. It was one of the best jobs I've ever had in my life. Shout out, Bagel Ridge. So, yes, it's a big deal there in New York. Go ahead.
Having it legal in a place that is so much a part of the world, mm-hmm, community is a big deal.
Yeah.
I also think it is an enormous deal that it happens anywhere in the middle of the country as well. So in places where you think it's completely unlikely.
Right.
So when Iowa went and did it, and everyone was like, "What, Iowa? Oh," that was also a big deal. But having it happen in New York, it bumps it up a notch.
Yeah.
It bumps it up a notch.
It's a good thing.
It's a great thing.
It's a good thing. But at the same time, I don't want us to become complacent and be like, we're done.
Oh, no. Absolutely not. But it's certainly a benchmark, because now this corner of the United States is definitely looking a lot more gay marriage-y.
Right.
We gotta work on Maine and figure that out.
And Rhode Island.
And Rhode Island.
Rhode Island is a holdout.
Rhode Island's a whole, and I don't understand.
They have this whole, because they were founded, I learned that through this show, because of the religious traditions really founded in Rhode Island that never really went away.
Huh.
They're just, that's going to be how Rhode Island is. But we don't accept that.
No, and
we
they don't
do not
to
accept
either.
That. So now here's a story over from Ireland. Now, you've been to Ireland many times.
I wish.
Never been?
No, I've been to England.
This is the same thing. It's really not. I'm going to get like
no. Oh, my gosh. Something's going to strike you dead now. They are really not the same thing ever, ever, ever.
I would like to apologize to all of the citizens of both England and Ireland, and especially after last week when we had So Gay Magazine. It was a flippant joke that I may or may not edit out. I probably won't, because it was, yeah. So over in Ireland... I'm actually scared now for the safety of the show.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
If anything is going to increase the amount of emails, it was me being flippant about English. Jody, they're not the same thing, Jody Clark. They're not. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can reach Jody at thisshowissogay@aol.com. I was testing her. She hasn't been here in a while.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
I'm in so much trouble. I'm really sorry to everyone I've ever met, ever. Today marked the end of a campaign, and we talked about this. And so this kind of, I don't know, maybe it's not disappointing because I don't live in Ireland, so I don't know a ton about the story, but today marked the end of a campaign by the gay man, who actually has a name, Senator David Norris, who has led public opinion polls to become Ireland's president. He was discovered this past weekend to have long ago, this is very... Mm-hmm. Gosh, it's such an interesting scandal, if mm-hmm. I can say. Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't.
So he was found to have long ago sent a letter to Israeli authorities asking for clemency for his former partner.
Mm-hmm.
So you're with me so far.
Okay, yep.
Who was accused of statutory rape involving a 15-year-old boy. He failed to disclose his ongoing relationship with this guy, who was later convicted. The Irish public, which has been upset by the molestation scandal in the Catholic Church, quickly seemed to withdraw its support for their once favored son. A string of high-profile resignations from Norris's campaign staff preceded wary statements from other prominent backers, and now he has announced, quote, "I deeply regret the most recent of all the controversies concerning my former partner of 25 years ago." 25? This is such an interesting story. Continuing with the quote, "The fallout from his disgraceful behavior has now spread to me and is in danger of contaminating others close to me in my political and personal life. It is essential that I act decisively now to halt this negative process." And I don't know, maybe I need to read more about this story. What a scandal. What an odd scandal that happened 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think, like, now I'm not going to be able to run for office because of my England in 25 years. I won't be able to run for office because of my England and Ireland comments.
Comment. I think it's a little different.
Do you?
I do. Yeah.
Do you not associate what I said with a former partner being asked for clemency for statutory?
It's a little
different.
Yeah.
So that's kind of sad. Ireland was just about to get a gay president, and now they're not going to get a gay president. So that's okay, I guess. Someone else gay, you should run.
Yeah.
Now, I know this is a story that's important to you. Unblocking online LGBT resources at a Georgia school district will not subject students to inappropriate material. This is what the ACLU has said in response to a recent claim from a conservative legal group. It's all about, I think you and I have talked about this before on the show, just about what kind of online content should kids have access to.
Yes.
And the answer is?
The answer is they should have access to those resources.
Yeah.
Especially if they're in any way in a rural area, because that's possibly all they've got.
Right.
They need to have access to that. They need to have access to websites so that they don't feel crazy.
You know what's interesting, though? So I feel like this is going to be a little bit anachronistic. You're going to get a little confused, folks, by what I'm about to say. We actually recorded parts of next show because I'm away on my bike ride, which we'll talk about next week. And so we will be talking next week and have already recorded with Davey Wavy, who's got his huge YouTube site, 54 million upload views there on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I learned after speaking to him that YouTube calls people and they say, hey, do you want to be an official YouTube channel? And he said yes. But it turns out he does not have any control over the advertising that's on there.
Oh, really?
So he will occasionally find that an ad for Michelle Bachmann might be on his YouTube channel. And if you two things that don't go together, Davey Wavy and Michelle Bachmann. So the interesting thing is, with some of these resources, they might not have control over the advertising. So can it ever be said, can a school ever say, yes, this site is totally secure? By the way, the answer is yes. Listen, you know, but I don't know. How do we come up with the list of what is a resource and what isn't?
I think in some ways it is a little bit on the security of and what the website can promise.
Mm-hmm.
So a place like YouTube, it's such a free for all.
Right.
It's kind of the Wild West. It's anything goes and anything and everything is out there. So I understand when schools block that or employers block that because you don't know what's going to pop up if you accidentally type something in the search and that wasn't what you meant or whatever. It also does take up a huge amount of bandwidth in places that don't have lots of bandwidth. That's bad for their internets.
Yes. It's not a good thing.
Not a good thing when it takes up too much.
No, because the schools usually have limited amounts. So we're going to keep an eye on that story because they're still trying to ban certain sites there down in Georgia.
Mm.
I highly, highly encourage both Jody and all of our listeners to check out this op-ed right now by writer Stephanie Schroeder. It's over on advocate.com. And the op-ed is entitled, "When Will Gay Men Shut Up and Listen?"
Whoa.
I know.
Whoa.
And the subheader is, writer Stephanie Schroeder says it's time to end the myth that lesbian relationships begin with a U-Haul truck and end in sexlessness.
Oh.
Pretty cool, right?
Well, if there are gay men, actually, if there's anyone who thinks that that is how it always is, that's just incorrect.
What do you mean?
It's just incorrect.
What? But no. All I'm saying is that on the first date, that
That's
you do talk about shared space.
No,
I don't understand. All right. So you should read this op-ed. When will gay men shut up and listen? Although it is interesting that it is targeted towards gay. I mean, it's the advocate.
I mean, that is definitely interesting. I'm curious why it's just gay men, because certainly other people assume that too.
I will read the first paragraph. By the tenor and content of many gay media reports today, it appears as if the conversation in the queer community about sex is only by and about gay men like Dan Savage, and somehow by extension how perhaps straight couples are learning new models of partnerships from gay men's relationship. In reality, it's only said once, queer women are indeed talking about the same things gay men are talking about vis-a-vis sex and relationships. So you think that's true?
I do think that's true.
All right. So people should go read this, "When Will Gay Men Shut Up and Listen?" and realize there's a difference between England and Ireland. I can't believe I said that. And I would edit that out, but I just want people to understand that sometimes I do leave stuff in. So that's it. I'm leaving on Monday.
Yeah.
You're going to hold down the fort.
I am.
I am going to Montreal. Bienvenue à Montreal.
Yeah.
There's French there, right?
Yes.
Okay.
A lot.
I have now exhausted the French in my repertoire. That's not true. S'il vous plaît, un sandwich de la beurre de cacahuète et confiture.
I'm not sure what that means.
Please, I need a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Oh, that's
so I should be fine.
You should also know that the signs will be at least bilingual, if not all.
Ugh. French. So they're like.
So you need to. But see, this is great. You'll learn more French.
That's a good thing.
So stop signs. It'll say stop and arrêt.
I went to my parents took us on various vacations, and we went to some French speaking. I think it was Guadeloupe growing up once, and all I learned was je m'appelle. Do you know je m'appelle?
Isn't that my name is?
Yes, but I didn't know what it meant. We just heard a lot of people saying it. So myself and Jamie Salzberg, shout out Jamie, my debate partner in high school. Jamie and I just went around all of Guadeloupe saying, oh, je m'appelle, hello, je m'appelle. And people would be like, what? No, just je m'appelle. Have a great day. So that's my French knowledge. So I am leaving on Monday for Montreal. I will be biking. I will be attempting to bike from Montreal to Portland, Maine, not Portland, Oregon, that I said in one show, because otherwise I won't be back ever. I won't make it. And I'm raising money. So if raising money, I shouldn't say this one is not for me.
Right, no.
This is raising money to actually find a vaccine for HIV and AIDS. So it's a little bit different because some of the other rides I've done in the past are raising money to treat people with HIV and AIDS. This is a ride that's actually trying to find a cure. And all the money goes to the Emory Vaccine Center and the UCLA AIDS Institute. And my whole goal is to get 500 people to donate $10. 500, and you guys have already done it.
Yep.
You're done.
Yep.
So we're up to way over $3,000. So 300 people have taken on the challenge, and I encourage you all to take on the challenge. You can just go to thisshowisogay.com, and right there on the homepage is a link to donate $10. If you can, that would be incredible. Does it feel good to be back on the show?
It does.
All right.
I've missed it.
I've missed you. Yeah. I missed having someone else here.
Yeah.
I would have just said indexes, and I would have just run with that England and Ireland are the same. I realize I should stop saying it because I'm going to get some sort of horrible, horrible feedback. So that's it for us, folks. You heard from Tom Meiser about how important Broadway is. Have you been to a lot of Broadway shows?
I have not been to a lot. I've been to a couple.
Favorite Broadway show?
My favorite Broadway show, which I've not actually seen on Broadway, but I know was on, is Into the Woods.
And so folks will see the humor in the fact that Jody wasn't able to hear my interview with Tom Meiser. And so that's just funny what just happened. So Jody's going to listen to the interview later.
Yes. And I'm going to be like, oh no.
And find out why that was funny. Yeah. So, all right. That's it for us, folks. You get out there. Go do some amazing. Oh, my gosh. Do you even remember how to end the show? It's been so long.
I think I do.
Get out there. Go do some amazing, incredible, incredible things. And remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Maybe he's right. Maybe there is something the matter with me. I just don't see how a world that makes such wonderful things could be bad. Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think my collection's complete? Wouldn't you think I'm the girl who has everything? Look at this trove, treasures untold. How many wonders can one cavern hold?